hear it more than I ever have before. I can hear a man's voice calling from behind the house. Do you hear that?
Oh, yes, Larissa says. He's been calling out for as long as I've been here. That's normal.
Do you know who it is?
No.
She shakes her head and looks around the room as if she's expecting someone to walk in.
Sometimes I think it sounds like my Douglas, but it can't be him.
Why can't it be him?
Because if it was him, I'd be able to see him, wouldn't I?
I blink rapidly, not sure how to answer. I don't know. But I want to help her, and if it's Douglas outside, I want to help him, too. I'll go see.
Be careful, she says. It's different today.
Can you leave the house?
I can only go out to the back steps, but I can't go further.
I nod and stand, heading out the back of the house toward the loud voice of a man, yelling. I can't make out what he's saying. I walk through the back door, and Larissa is still with me. She stays on the steps, wringing her hands at her waist as I walk down the path, lined with oak trees toward what I assume is the old slave quarters. Hello, I call out. There are several spirits here. Two children are playing hopscotch on the sidewalk. An older woman is rocking in a chair on the porch on one of the small slave quarter buildings. Her dark skin is wrinkled, her hair white and standing up on end.
You shouldn't be here, she says.
She's not mean or angry. She's trying to warn me. Who is yelling out? I ask, opening my mind wider so I can search out. Miss Sophia told me to keep myself closed up, but I want to help Larissa. I know I can help her.
That young man has been yelling out in torment for a century, she says, her face turning sad. Poor boy.
Where is he?
She frowns.
Why, he's right there. Can't you see him?
I turn in a circle, looking around me. The voice is getting louder, more frantic. And then, there he is.
Are you Douglas?
He's out of breath, panting as if he's just run 100 miles.
Yes'm, he nods. I can't find Larissa. She's lost.
I know where she is, I reply, excited that there is finally something good that I can do with my gift. I can take you to her.
You can?
His eyes fill with tears.
I've been looking everywhere.
She's in the house.
His face falls.
I can't go in there.
What do you mean?
I've tried to look in the house, but I can't go up the back steps.
Oh, God. This is heartbreaking. Why would this happen?
But before I can try to help further, absolute darkness falls around us. I can't see my hand 5 inches from my face.
What is happening?
The red glow is back, the same one from the cemetery.
I have to help you,
I say to Douglas, who is looking in the direction of the house, his face a mixture of pain and longing.
It's her, he whispers.
I follow his gaze, and sure enough, Larissa is walking carefully toward us. She's scared and hopeful. And then, I'm suddenly standing in front of my grandmother.
Oh, my God.
Hello, my love, she says.
You're here. Why are you here?
Because you need me.
Her eyes are sad, belying the smile on her beautiful face.
He's here to hurt you, darling.
Who? He was here before,
Larissa adds, her voice trembling.
When I saw you before, with the other women.
The seance, I say, and she nods.
I've never seen anyone else in the house before then.
She can't see the living?
I ask Grandmama, who shakes her head slowly.
This is so fucking weird.
Watch your language, Grandma says sharply.
Did you find Douglas?
Larissa asks.
I did, I reply, He's right here.
Oh,
her eyes fill with tears.
I can't see him. Why can't I see him?
Why can't she see him? I ask Grandmama.
Because she's being punished for throwing herself off of that cliff.
They're both being punished.
Well, that's horrible.
The red glow intensifies.
He's coming.
Who?
You know who.
Remember your talk with Sophia. And then it all comes back to me in a rush. The day at the cemetery, and the story Miss Sophia told me after.
He wants to kill me.
Yes.
The way he killed you.
Yes.
Do you see him?
I ask her. She tilts her head to the side, as if in surprise.
You can't?
I glance around again. I only see the dead.
Oh, no,
Larissa says.
He's coming, Douglas says at the same time.
What is happening?
I shout, terrified.
They can help you, Grandma says. Larissa and Douglas can help. But you have to open yourself up completely. You have to accept what and who you are.
But I want to help them. This isn't fair.
She's right,
Larissa says to me.
Your grandmother is right. We can help.
She's calm now, as if she understands something that once eluded her.
That's why we've been here all along.
It wasn't to find each other,
Douglas adds, as if he can hear Larissa.
It was to help you.
They should get each other, I say softly to Grandmama, who simply smiles and pats my hand. That's not meant to be, child.
You're leaving, Mallory,
Larissa says.
You have your love, who is also leaving, and ready to spend that life with you. Our love is already lost. Let us help you.
All you have to do is open your mind, Grandmama says. But once you do, there's no going back. You'll be permanently open, and you'll have to learn to live with it.
But the alternative is to die, I reply.
Yes.
I glance between Larissa and Douglas, then to my grandmother. It's cold.
He's so close, Douglas says.
He's not afraid anymore.
I want to end this. I don't want to be here anymore.
Live your life, child, Grandmama says, and takes my hand. I feel her fear, her love.
I miss you.
I know, and you'll be with me, but not now, not like this. Embrace it and fight back. Don't let him win again.
No.
I square my shoulders, tip my head back, and open my mind completely. Then fall to the ground as the wind swirls around us. Larissa and Douglas vaporize, turn into blue mist that moves in a flash to the red, surrounding it completely. And then the red takes over again.
They're not strong enough,
I shout, trying to be heard over the roar of the wind.
They are, Grandmama insists.
Her hair is a riot around her head, her silver cloak swirling in the wind.
We're here.
Miss Sophia and Lena?
Evil be gone,
Sophia shouts, and takes Grandmama's hand as Lena takes mine. They chant, loudly and growing in volume, words I've never heard before. It makes the red light dim and the blue intensify, and just when I think the red will die, it explodes in anger, filling the sky and air around us, surrounding us, knocking us on our backs.
I can't see the blue at all now. Join them,
Lena yells.
I don't know the spell. Just say what we say.
And so I do, listening carefully and learning the spell. By the third time they begin to chant it, I have it down and join in, my voice strong and loud. The four of us levitate off the ground, a storm of wind, railing against the red darkness that shrieks in pain and retreats. The blue lights are back, stronger and brighter, and together we advance until the red light explodes, like fireworks, into a million sparks. The wind is gone. It's dead still as we return to the earth. The blue lights fly above us. then merge together and fly away. They're finally together, I murmur.
And he's finally dead, Grandmama says.
She blinks fast and falls to her knees.
Oh God, Sophia. I see the girls. I see the house. I know where they are.
Tell us, I say, holding on to her hands. But she doesn't have to. Instead, I can see everything she sees. A dozen girls, maybe more, chained to the wall in a dark basement. They're naked and cold. One is dead.
The vision pulls back so I can see the whole house and the street signs.
I know where they are.
How?
I ask.
Because you've opened yourself up, Grandmama says. But don't worry. This is not your life's work. It was mine. And you've just helped me finish. You call Detective Williams and tell her where the girls are.
And that's it?
That's it. For now.
She hugs me tightly. You'll always see the dead. You're a medium and an empath, Mallory. You can help them, the way you just helped Larissa and Douglas.
They saved me.
You saved them, too.
She smiles softly. And you're about to help me.
You? Why do you need help?
I need to move on, she says, and brushes a lock of hair off my cheek.
Beau does that, I say.
I know. I like him.
You've seen him?
Of course. I told you I would be here.
I've never seen you.
You didn't need me until now.
She cups my cheeks in her hands. You are a beautiful, talented, wonderful woman, Mallory.
I want you to live every moment of your life. I want you to enjoy it all.
I don't want you to go.
I know.
She smiles gently and looks over to Miss Sophia and Lena.
But just like before, you're in good hands, and your beau will be a wonderful, worthy partner for you, darling.
I didn't want to say goodbye before, and I don't want to now.
It's time, love.
It's time to let go.
If you'll let me go, I can move on to be with your grandfather and your parents.
And your Melissa.
Tears fill her eyes and she nods, hope shining through her. I've waited a long time to hold her again. My heart sinks.
I'm selfish.
Miss Sophia and Lena are on either side of me now, and I can feel Beau with me too. I take a deep breath and brush the tears from my cheeks.
I love you, Grandmama.
I love you, Mallory.
I look up at the light that's appeared behind her.
There it is. There's the way.
She turns to look, and her face lights up.
Oh, look at that.
Thank you, darling.
And with that, she walks away. I can see the shapes of people waiting for her. They greet her with hugs and love. And then the light closes, and it's gone.
You're brave.
Beau whispers in my ear. I glance around, but I'm alone. Yet, I'm not alone. And it's time to go home.
Chapter 18. Beau. Where is she going? Gabby asks as Mallory stands and slowly leaves the dining room. I don't know, I reply. She has the same dilated eyes that she had the night of the séance, Gabby says as we all stand and follow her through the kitchen to the back porch. She's talking to someone, but I can't make out the words. All I know for sure is she's not here. She's somewhere else. And I'm terrified. The phone in Mallory's pocket rings, so I reach for it and answer. Lena, something's happening.
I know, my grandmother and I are on our way. Stay with her. What is she doing?
She's walking out of the house, I reply. She's talking to someone we can't see. She's stopped on the stairs and is looking to the back of the property. We'll be there in 10 minutes. She hangs up, and I've never felt so fucking useless in my life. I don't know what to do. We'll flank her, Reese says, standing to the other side of Mallory. and we'll keep her as physically safe as possible. But it's a metaphysical fight, Gabby whispers, watching with wide eyes. Thank God the kids aren't here. Mallory walks down the sidewalk to where Gabby had the old slave quarter buildings moved so guests can see them and learn about the history of our plantation and others in this area. Mallory, I'm right here, I say, but there's no response. You're safe, baby. How can she not hear you? Reese asks in frustration. He's very much like me, a protector, and when someone we care about is struggling, we need to help them. I don't know for sure, I reply, shaking my head. The wind has picked up. There was no storm in the forecast, Gabby says with a frown. Mallory reaches out as if to hug someone. Her mouth is moving with words, but no sound is coming out. Her red hair is a riot in the wind, and her eyes are hauntingly black. We're here, Lena exclaims as she and an older woman I'm assuming is her grandmother run to us. What's happening to her? I demand.
She's speaking with the dead, Lena says. This is my grandmother, Sophia.
Where were you when it started?
The older woman asks. We were eating dinner inside. Suddenly Mallory whips her gaze back to the house and shakes her head no.
We have to go in, Sophia says to Lena. You and I must hold hands while we hold hers to ground each other. You chant what I do, just follow my lead.
If this isn't safe, I begin, but Sophia cuts me off.
She'll die, she says fiercely. He's here to kill her.
Who? I step back, stunned and panicked at once. Who the fuck is trying to kill her?
The same madman that killed her grandmother, Lena says. She's fighting for her life, Beau. We have to hold her hands, but you ground her the best. I want you to touch her shoulders and stand beside her so she can fall back onto you if need be.
Now, Sophia says, and the three join hands and their pupils also go black.
Jesus,
Reese mutters and rubs his hand over his mouth. I'll stand on this side to steady them. I nod and move behind Mallory, placing my hands on her shoulders. Every muscle in her body is tight. The wind is still swirling around us, and the three women are talking, almost chanting in unison, but they're not making any noise.
I've never seen anything like this,
Gabby says and slips her hand into Reese's.
I think they're waging a war.
I nod, my eyes never leaving Mallory. Suddenly, Lena and Sophia blink their eyes and wake up, looking at each other. They both sag in exhaustion, and Reese steps up to let them lean on him. Where is she? I demand when Mallory doesn't blink and come back to me right away.
She's saying goodbye, Lena says sadly. But we killed that horrible piece of shit.
Where?
Gabby asks, looking around.
There's no one else here.
Not physically,
Sophia says and wipes her forehead on her sleeve.
But he was here.
A tear slips down Mallory's cheek. Who is she saying goodbye to? I ask.
Her grandmama,
Lena says. Finally, Mallory blinks and takes a gasping breath, falling back against me.
Mal, baby, are you with me?
I'm here,
she says, searching frantically for her phone.
I have to call Lieutenant Williams. Where's my damn phone?
Who?
I pass the phone to her, and she thumbs through until she finds the number she wants.
The sick shit who kidnapped, raped, and starved little girls just died, and I know where they are.
Holy fuck, Reese says in shock.
This is Mallory Adams. I know the location of the missing girls. Are you okay, Beau?
Mama asks a few hours later. She brought the kids home to the plantation, helped get them settled, and chatted with all of us for a bit before I took an exhausted Mallory out to my old place in the former carriage house. I don't know what I am, I reply honestly.
How's Mal?
She's asleep out in the carriage house.
And why aren't you with her?
I shrug and lean on the kitchen counter, crossing my arms over my chest. I have never felt so helpless as I did this evening.
And you're the fixer,
she says with a nod.
Not everything in this world is fixable, Beau.
It's my job to protect my family, and I brought a medium right into their house, and it scared the shit out of all of us.
So it's Mallory's fault?
I didn't say that, I reply in frustration. But she didn't tell me what was happening with the psycho who had targeted her. She didn't tell me how her grandmother died. Those are some pretty big things to forget to mention.
Perhaps she just wanted to be a woman enjoying a man and not a psychic.
She's both, I reply with a frown.
Does it make you love her less?
It scares me, I reply, evading the question. What if it happens again? Or what if it's even worse and it puts the family at risk? I don't know if I can continue with this if... I can't finish the thought, but Mama nods, understanding.
You've always protected us, Bo. Before your daddy died, and even more so after.
It's my job.
No, my dear boy. It's not your job.
I'm the eldest, and Papa's gone. Of course it's my job to see after all of you.
But what about you?
She asks and slams her fist on the countertop, pissed off. You're a man. You're a successful, intelligent, handsome man who deserves to love a woman and have children and everything else that goes with that. And rather than pursue a family of your own, you've spent your entire adulthood taking care of the rest of us. It's okay for you to take care of yourself for a change, Bo. We can take care of ourselves. I'm no martyr, I reply, just as pissed. I'm just doing the right thing, and I don't know if bringing Mallory into our family is the right thing.
Yes, you do, she replies, more softly now. But I think you're scared of a woman for the first time in your life, not because of her unusual gifts, but because you love her.
I do love her, I murmur. I'm crazy about her.
A mother knows these things, she says with a smile. What could possibly be wrong with bringing the woman you love into your family?
She shut me out, I reply immediately. She was in danger and she didn't tell me. There's no way to go into a partnership.
It always circles back to trust, doesn't it?
I nod and pinch the bridge of my nose. Always. The ironic thing is, Mal and I have talked about the importance of honesty and trust from the beginning of our relationship.
And tonight you feel betrayed.
I should have been prepared. I reply and push away from the counter to pace the kitchen. I should have known what was happening so I could help her.
You did help her.
But I couldn't defend her against the guy trying to kill her.
I didn't need you to.
Both of our heads whip around to the open back door where Mallory stands, watching us with tired eyes, her hands firmly propped on our hips.
It was not your fight, she says. I'm going to head out,
Mama says with a smile. She walks to Mallory and kisses her cheek, then pulls her in for a hug.
I'm so relieved that you're safe. Thank you.
Mama winks at me as she leaves us alone in the kitchen. I thought you'd sleep for a while. She nods and steps inside, closing the door behind her.
I woke up and you weren't there.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
She smiles sadly and sits at the breakfast bar. So you can read my mind now?
No.
She shakes her head.
But I can read body language and facial expressions as easily as the next person, and you're not sorry, and that's okay. You needed to be alone.
How much did you hear?
Enough.
She looks down at the countertop for a moment as if gathering her thoughts, and when she looks back up at me, there is so much sadness in her violet eyes it makes me want to scoop her up and tell her that everything will be okay. But I don't know if it's going to be okay.
I scared you today.
That could be the understatement of the year. She nods.
I need to tell you some things, but first I want to say this. If you want to part ways as friends after everything that's happened tonight, and what I'm about to tell you, I completely understand.
I'm not fucking parting ways with you. I lean back against the countertop and nod. Okay?
Okay.
She takes a deep breath and lets it out again.
I'd like to explain about what happened tonight. I didn't understand all of it until it actually happened, and the pieces have just started coming together in the past week or two. The night I did the seance there, I saw a darkness. That's the only way to explain it. It appeared fast, and it was gone just as fast because I slammed my mind's door on it. Nothing like that had ever happened before, and I brushed it off as being something here at the inn, like a spirit. Then the day I went to the cemetery with Miss Sophia and Lena, it returned, but stronger. And Miss Sophia knew what it was because she'd seen it before. It was the man who killed my grandmother all those years ago. He had been released from the mental institution and was back at abducting and torturing young girls. And he was a powerful psychic who targeted me because he assumed that because of who my grandmother was, that I would step in and try to help law enforcement find him.
Why didn't you? I ask.
Because that's not my gift. I can't see the living physically like my grandmother could. That's how she helped find so many lost children. I can only see the dead. So after the encounter at the cemetery, Miss Sophia gave me more details about my grandmother's death, and she was researching how we should move forward with what was happening currently. She had put a protective spell over me, and I'd been bathing in lots of disgusting tea as protection, too.
And you didn't think that I'd want to be in the loop so I could also keep you safe?
I don't know how you could have done that, she replies. You would have worried, but the dude in New York wasn't a physical threat. He was in my head.
I shake my head and pace as she keeps talking.
I understand if you don't want me to be around your family, but I can promise you that I will never put them in danger. I'm not normal, Beau, and I never will be. I've discovered that I can do a lot of good as a medium. I'm not saying that I'm going into business and seeking out a television show, but there will be moments when I have to turn my attention to someone you can't see so I can help them. That's not my issue. Let me finish. She holds her hand up, and I stop talking, listening instead. I'm not normal, but I love you so much I ache with it. I want to hurry around this island and take her in my arms to reassure her, but I wait, giving her space to finish. I've wanted to tell you for a long time, but I was afraid. It's stupid, she says, and impatiently brushes a tear off her cheek. Life's too precious and short to not say what you mean, so I'm saying it. I didn't withhold information to spite you, or because I didn't trust you. She shrugs as if trying to find the words. I just didn't know what to tell you. Everything, I reply and finally cross to her. I tip her chin up so I can look in her eyes. I want you to tell me everything, especially if it hurts or scares you. I was so thrown off guard and afraid for you this evening, I thought I was going to lose you. And if it wasn't for my family, you might have. The thought turns my stomach. You are everything to me, Mallory. You're not abnormal. You can do things that others can't do. Do you believe me? She whispers, making me frown. What do you mean? I know that you're a no-nonsense man and that you've indulged me, especially in the beginning. But, Beau, I need you to believe me. I don't love you despite your gifts, Mallory. I love you, period. In the end, isn't that what we all want? Someone to choose us, to love us no matter the circumstances. She nods, letting the tears fall unchecked down her cheeks. You are a magical, beautiful, amazing woman, Mallory, and I love everything about you. I do trust you. I'm a handful, she says with a wet smile, making me smirk. I have two hands, I reply, finally pulling her in for a hug. And you have me, she says against my chest. You're my home, Beau. After Grandmama moved on, all I wanted to do was come home to you. Which leads me to what I wanted to talk to you about earlier this afternoon. I reply and pull back a bit so I can see her face. When it's time for me to move into the new house, I'd like for you to move in with me. Her face lights up. I love your house. I'd like for it to be our house. Oh. She takes a deep, cleansing breath. Are you sure? Never been more sure. You're my home, too. She swallows and nods. I'd like that. But do I have to help in the garden? No, baby. We want to eat the vegetables, not kill them. She slept like a baby all night wrapped around me. I didn't sleep a wink. Instead, I held her, enjoying the warmth of her, the smell of her hair, and the sweet way she would drag her hand up and down my side. I couldn't get the image of the look on her face as she stood behind the inn, fighting a force I couldn't see out of my head. I'm not comfortable with the thought of not being able to protect her from everything. I love her. But I'm used to handling, well, everything. Not that a woman is something to be handled. My mama would have my hide if she heard me say something like that. As soon as I see dawn break, I untangle myself from Mallory's grasp, pull on yesterday's clothes, and walk out to the cemetery. I haven't been to this spot since my dad passed away. There was never a need. But I could sure use his advice now. You died too soon, I murmur and sit on the bench directly across from his headstone. Although, any time would have been too soon. It's quiet today. The sky is clear and full of pink and purple with the rising sun. I don't know what to do about her. And I'm not even entirely sure what I'm hung up about. I've asked her to move in with me, for Christ's sake. It's not like I want to break it off. Absolutely not. But I'm unsettled. Am I such a control freak that being with a woman who doesn't need me all the time emasculates me? I wouldn't think so. I love that she's strong and independent. And what in the ever-loving hell am I doing at my father's grave? It's not like I can see the dead. That's Mallory's gig. I wonder if she's seen him. That's an unsettling thought. I rub my hand over my face and stand to leave. There aren't any answers here. Hi, Mallory says with a smile, surprising me. Well, hi, did I wake you? No. She looks at the headstone, then at me. I have someone with me who would love to talk to you.
I cock a brow and glance around, but there's no one else here. Who would that be? She looks to her left just a few feet from where I am, and nods.
Your father?
That's impossible, I reply. My father is dead. She sighs and shakes her head, her eyes filled with sadness.
You don't believe, Beau. You don't believe at all.
Mal,
just hold your coin and think of your dad. Then come find me when you have your stuff all figured out.
She turns to leave and I want to follow her, but instead I push my hand into my pocket and find the coin I always carry. You would think that as often as I hold it, I would wear it down. You always were the most stubborn child of mine. My head whips up at the sound of the voice I'll never forget. Holy shit. Indeed. Chapter 19. Beau.
What's eating at you, son?
My father asks, and I have to take a deep breath, shake my head, and rub my fingers over the coin in my pocket, not entirely sure that I'm not drunk or asleep.
Are you not speaking to me?
He asks with a grin.
I'm not sure that you're really here, I reply.
I'm here,
he says, and sits on the ground at his headstone, leaning against it. He's wearing his favorite old jeans and Tulane University sweatshirt, and he's so real I could reach out and touch him.
And I know you. You're pissed.
I am not, I reply and sit on the bench across from him.
Why would I be pissed?
Because you've come across something that you can't fix or manipulate, he shrugs.
I understand. I was the same way. It was my job to make sure that your mother and you kids were safe and to provide for you all.
You always did that, I reply.
There were moments that baffled me, Beau. I'm a man, as are you. You're a powerful man with an infinite number of resources at your fingertips, but there will be moments that baffle you too, because you're a man.
I'm supposed to be the head of our company and our family,
which you're doing a damn good job of, he says, and I just go still.
I'm dumbfounded, and not embarrassed to feel my eyes fill with tears.
Do you assume that I'd think differently?
No, I've just wondered, since you passed, if you could see what Van, Eli, and I were doing with the company, and if you would approve.
I'm so damn proud of the three of you, Beau. Of all of my children. You're intelligent, happy, successful people. I don't go into the office often, I'll be honest. A man should enjoy his retirement.
I can't help but chuckle and shake my head.
My God, you're really here.
I'm always around.
He tilts his head to the side. I like to stick close to your mama. Not because she needs me, but because she's my heart, and by her side is where I'm supposed to be. But I check in with all of you from time to time.
Have you talked with Mallory? He smiles brightly now and nods. She's a sweet girl, your Mallory.
She is,
I agree, thinking of her kind smile, her gentleness.
And she concerns you, he adds.
I don't know what I'm feeling, I reply and rub my hand over my face. And this is new to me.
Well, that's love for you, son, he says and slaps his knee with a laugh. You're going on 40 years old and you're just now finding it.
I'm only 37, I reply, and finding love was never at the top of my priority list.
That was my fault, he says. I pushed the business too hard.
No, you didn't, I interrupt. I loved it. I still do. I don't regret 1 minute that I spent with you in the office. You taught me more than I ever learned in college. I just wish that you were still here so I could still call you with questions.
I swallow hard.
I miss you, Dad.
I know, he says. I miss all of you, too. I can see you, but I can't always speak with you, and that hurts. But I'm here, Beau. I'll be here for quite some time yet.
Mallory could help you if you wanted to move on.
To my surprise, he just shakes his head, but then smiles widely. You do believe her.
Well, she's not crazy. Of course I believe her. But I'm a black-and-white kind of man. I don't live in the gray area of life, and if I can't see it with my own eyes, well, I find it hard to buy into. And yet here I am.
Thanks to her. I finish for him and shove my fingers through my hair.
Stop overthinking it, he says. You're the most analytical of my kids. You overthink everything, and on top of it all, you're a control freak. That's great with business, but not with love. She's not a job, she's a woman. You're going to fuck up now and then, I can promise you that. She'll get mad and maybe even hurt. But let me tell you something, Beau. Loving her will be the best thing you ever do in your life.
Regardless of all of my accomplishments while I was here, being married to your mother was the best part of me.
We knew it, I replied gruffly, and she knew it.
That's how it should be. So I'm going to remind you of something that I always told you kids. You can't control the wind, but you can adjust your sails. That applies more in relationships than any other part of life, my boy. And while you didn't exactly fall in love with a sailor, the metaphor still applies. We laugh together, and it feels so fucking good I don't want to let go of it. Not yet. She's definitely not a sailor. I smile, watching the man that I love so much and miss more than words can say. Are you okay, Papa?
What do you mean?
Where you are you safe? Are you happy? His hazel eyes soften. You know, your Mallory asked her grandmother the same question when she saw her. You two are more alike than you think. I'm perfectly safe and I'm happy for now. You mentioned that Mallory could help me move on, but I'm not ready. I'll wait for my sweetie, and I hope she's here with you for a very long time.
Me too, I reply with a nod. Will this be the last time I see you?
He takes a deep breath and glances around at the tall oak trees, the early morning blue sky, and then back to me. No, I'll be around. But you don't need to come to the cemetery to talk to me. It's rather depressing, don't you think?
I laugh a full belly laugh.
I guess it is. I wonder why people do that. Maybe it has something to do with seeing your name and knowing you're buried here.
But I'm not, he says with a wink. I'm not 6 feet under. I'm watching over my family.
Can I touch you?
He holds his hand out.
Help an old man up off the ground.
I take his hand and it feels just as it did when he was living, strong. I pull him up and am immediately engulfed in his arms. My father was always a hugger, and I didn't realize until just now how much I missed that.
I've needed this, I murmur as he pulls away.
I know, he says and pats my shoulder. Now go find your girl and make things right with her.
I love you, Beau.
I love you too, Dad.
I head back for the carriage house, hoping to find Mallory. I'm not disappointed. I find her in the kitchen, arranging a bouquet of forget-me-nots in a vase.
Hi, I say. Hello,
she replies and smiles stiffly.
How is your chat?
I shake my head.
I don't think I have the words to describe it yet.
She nods and sets the vase of flowers on the table.
I'll take these up to Gabby before we leave so she and the guests can enjoy them.
It was nice of you to pick them.
I had to get some aggression out, and it turns out that ripping flowers from the earth is a pretty good way to do that.
I prop my hands on my hips and watch as she turns to me, raises her chin, and squares her shoulders as if she's getting ready to take a blow. That's my fault.
I owe you an apology, Mallory.
I'd say you do,
she says with a nod.
So let's hear it.
I want to pull her into my arms and kiss her breathless, but instead I lean on the counter, bracing my hands at my hips, and start talking.
It's not that I didn't believe you, Mal. How could I not believe you? Especially after last night.
At first I believed that you believed it, and that was good enough for me. You see, I'm an analytical man. I live in a world with absolutes. It's either black or white. There is very little room for a gray area. And on top of that, I am a problem solver. Your gifts exhaust you, and sometimes they scare and hurt you, and there's nothing I can do to help you. I'm not comfortable with that.
You do help me, she says. There's a reason that I can't read you, Beau. You ground me, and you are my safe place. I felt you with me last night when I was fighting the darkness, and it was you that pulled me back. I needed you. I don't have to guard myself when I'm with you. I'm just a woman, not a psychic woman, when I'm with you. That is what you bring to my life, and that's what you should be for me.
I'm learning that, I reply. I can't keep my hands off of her anymore. I slowly cross to her and drag my knuckle down her cheek. I'm sorry that I've been an idiot. I can't promise that I'll never be an idiot again, but I'll never intentionally hurt you again.
She grins, turns her lips to my palm, and kisses it.
Apology accepted. And I apologize too.
For what?
For making you feel like you're out of the loop. I didn't mean to do that.
I know.
You do?
She's watching my lips now, and the mood has shifted from apprehensive to longing.
I want her.
I glide the pad of my thumb over her lower lip, then replace it with my own lips, sweeping back and forth, soaking in the taste of her. She anchors her hands at my sides, fisting my shirt as I devour her mouth. I can't keep my hands off of you.
Good,
she mutters as I cup her ass and lift her to me.
She wraps her legs around my waist and buries her face in my neck, kissing and biting. My semi-hard is a semi-no more. I spin and set her on the countertop, spread her wide, and grind myself against her through my pants and her jeans. Need you. My voice is gruff. She manages to shimmy out of her jeans and reaches for my pants as well. I'll never get enough of you.
That's convenient,
she replies as her hands slide down my bare ass.
Have I mentioned that you have a great ass?
Not today. She bites her lower lip.
Great ass.
You have a phenomenal ass, I reply as I nestle myself between her legs and just let my cock slip between her wet folds. Gorgeous tits. I suckle on one and then the other. Her head falls back with a sigh of pleasure. The softest skin I've ever seen.
Jojoba and Melaleuca oils,
she mutters, making me grin. They work.
I know.
She gasps when I reach between us and lightly rub the tip of my cock over her clit.
You're really talented with that.
It's a multipurpose tool, I reply and slip inside her. Fucking hell, you're wet, sugar.
Your fault,
she says with a gasp, arching her back.
You're sexy.
Her hands roam from her breast to her pussy, pressing on her clit and then on the base of my cock. She clenches around me and it's almost more than I can take. Not so fast. I pant and pull her hand up to kiss her fingers. I'm not ready to come yet.
No?
No. I pick her up and carry her, still inside her, to the bedroom and lower us both to the bed. I don't want to fuck her senseless. I want to make love to her. I brace my elbows beside her head and she cradles my pelvis between her thighs, and we just stay like this for a moment, staring into each other's eyes. I love you so much, Mallory. Her brow furrows in surprise and tears pool in her gorgeous blue eyes. Don't cry.
I've seen the love,
she says.
I've seen it in your eyes and I've felt it when you hold me, but it's an entirely different thing to hear it.
I said it last night, I remind her.
Yes, and then it felt like things had shifted overnight, like you had a chance to really think about what I am, and we're having second thoughts.
Not second thoughts, I reply and brush my fingers through her hair. I was just confused, and I'm an overthinker. Dad told me to cut that shit out and enjoy you.
I love your dad,
she says with a grin.
I love you,
I whisper against her lips. You'll get used to hearing it because I plan to say it every day just to remind you.
That's lovely,
she says. I move my hips slowly, pulling out and then pushing back inside, and she sighs. Is this lovely?
No, it's fucking amazing,
she says.
It's like you were made just for me.
Because I was, sugar.
Chapter 20, Mallory. 3 months later. You should go on home, I say to Shelley after she bags a customer's purchase and reshelves some items that another customer decided to pass on. It's Christmas Eve. Go spend it with your family. Are you sure? She frowns and glances about the shop. It seems to be slowing down, but it could get busy again. People have a whole year to plan for Christmas, and yet it seems everyone waits for Christmas Eve so they can panic. Well, I won't complain too much because it was a lucrative day. I grin and reach for the envelope I already addressed to my assistant and pass it to her. Merry Christmas. She opens the envelope and looks up at me in shock. This is too much. You deserve a bonus, I reply, and pull her in for a hug. I'm much less worried about being touched these days. Even though Grandmama was right and my walls are permanently down now, I'm learning to cope with this new way of life. Part of me wishes I'd done it long ago. It's much less stressful. Thank you, Shelley says. I brought you a little something. She disappears into the office, then returns with a small red gift bag. Thank you. I'm ridiculously touched by her gift, and I haven't even opened it yet. I sincerely like Shelley, and I'm so happy that I have her on my team. Open it, she says with a grin. Okay. I toss out the gold tissue and find a beautiful sprig of mistletoe. Oh, this is beautiful. I know it's tradition at Christmas, but I've also learned that it's for good luck and a love talisman. I thought it would be perfect for your new home. It's absolutely perfect, I agree and hug her once more. Thank you. I know just where we will hang it. Shelley grins and reaches for her handbag. You're not staying late, are you? No, I'm going to close up in a minute. I'm ready to go home, too. She nods and waves as she leaves. Merry Christmas! Same to you. I return the mistletoe to its bag, then set about the routine of closing up, counting the money drawer, closing out the credit cards, and taking out the trash. We are supposed to go to Beau's mom's house both this evening and tomorrow to celebrate with the family, and I'm nervous. It's our first Christmas together. But they were kind enough to also invite Lena and Miss Sophia so we could all be together, and it made me fall in love with Beau and his family even more deeply. And I didn't know that was possible. I lock the front door and turn around to find a bottle of lavender oil suspended in the air, and then it's thrown and broken against the wall. Miss Louisa! I prop my hands on my hips in frustration. You've been throwing a tantrum for a month now. What's wrong? She never shows herself to me, but she sure lets me know that she's here. This isn't the first time she's thrown something, and she's become famous for talking in my ear, startling the hell out of me. If you want to tell me why you're angry, just come talk to me. I'm right here. I stand still, listening. Everything is silent again, but I can still feel her here. Suddenly, she walks out of my office, as if she works here and she's coming out to help me with a customer. Hello, I say, watching her carefully. You're a beautiful woman. And a sad one. She nods and looks around the shop, concern written all over her lovely face. Have I done something wrong? I don't know why you're here, she says, surprising me. Her voice is soft and feminine. She's wearing a long blue dress with an apron, and her blonde hair is twisted up on the back of her head. I own this shop, I reply. I've been trying to make you leave, she says. I don't want a ghost in my place, and you keep moving things. I step back, completely stunned. Does she not know that she's dead? I'm tempted to shut her out and ignore her, the way I always did before 3 months ago, when everything happened out at the inn. But I'm learning that ignoring something doesn't change it, and Miss Louisa obviously needs me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be in your way. I can't bake my breads and sweets with you in the way. No, I imagine you can't. I blink and quickly try to decide how I'm going to handle this. Miss Louisa, do you know what year this is? Why, it's 1915, of course. Holy shit. I'm so sorry, Miss Louisa. I should have talked to you sooner, to try to help you. I don't understand what's happening, she replies, with tears in her eyes. I know that now, and I can help you. Do you remember not being here? I mean, do you remember the last time you went home for the evening? No, she says, shaking her head. I'm just always here. Sometimes I go up in the attic, but there are strange people up there, too. I don't want you to be afraid. You're not in danger. But I have to tell you that you've passed away, Miss Louisa, and you're stuck here. No, that can't be true. My husband will be here any minute to pick me up. He won't be here, I reply softly, but I can help you move on so you can be with him. You can? She asks, her whole face lit up with hope. I miss him. I haven't seen him in a very long time. That must be horrible, I reply, and take a deep breath, close my eyes, and feel a swirl of warm air. When I open my eyes, the light is behind her. There you go. Just turn around. She looks behind her, and her face lights up in delight. Teddy! He's finally here for me. Oh, thank you. And with that, she walks through the light, and then it's gone, the same way it was with Grandmama. There's no lingering sense of her here. The store and the upstairs loft are completely quiet and, aside from me, empty. Merry Christmas. I walk back to gather my things and hurry home. It's cooler today, although we certainly won't be having a white Christmas. The city is bustling with people hurrying to spend time with their loved ones, so my drive home takes a little longer than usual. But I don't mind. When I walk into our house, I'm welcomed with the warmth from the fireplace and the love of a very special man. The house is completely furnished now, and we are all moved in and unpacked. It seemed to take forever, but now it feels like we've always lived here. I can't believe how perfect it is for us. Merry Christmas, sugar, Beau says as I walk into the kitchen and find him plating our dinner. Merry Christmas, I reply as I take my jacket off, hang it on a bar stool, and take in the scene before me. I thought we were going to your mom's for dinner. Well, that was the plan, but I decided that I'd rather spend this evening by ourselves. Is that okay with you?
Sure, but Lena...
And Miss Sophia are still going to my mom's, he replies with a smile.
Well then, yes, this works for me.
He seems nervous, which is very unusual for my beau. He's the most self-assured man I know.
Are you okay?
I ask as he passes me a wine glass and I take a sip. I've never been better, he replies. Can you grab my glass and I'll take our plates to the table?
Of course.
I follow him to the dining room, where he's thrown a black tablecloth over our farm table and added candles and forget-me-nots, along with some fine china that I've never seen before. This is fancy.
It's Christmas, he replies with a shrug, and I wanted it to be pretty for you.
You've succeeded, I reply. I feel quite spoiled.
You're not spoiled,
he says, and tucks my hair behind my ear.
You should be indulged often.
I won't disagree, I say with a laugh. What did you make for us?
Lasagna with bread and salad.
That sounds amazing. I'm starving. I set my napkin in my lap and take a bite of salad. These tomatoes are fantastic. They're from the garden, right?
They are.
I smile and continue to munch away, not oblivious to his shifting in his seat and eating little of his dinner. But if he wants to share what's on his mind, he will do so in his own time. That's something I've learned about Beau. He needs to stew over something for a bit, and then he will talk to me about it. So I just continue to enjoy our Christmas Eve meal and the beautiful table he set for us. Business was good today. We were busy all day long. Shelley brought us a sprig of mistletoe for our house, I say, and take a sip of wine. It's for luck and love. I think I'll hang it in the bedroom.
That was nice of her, he replies,
and then suddenly sets his glass down and takes my free hand in his. Here we go.
I was going to wait to do this until after dinner, but it seems this is one situation where my patience skills are non-existent.
He smiles and pushes his dinner away from him, and I do the same, eager to hear what he has to talk about.
What's up?
I know we haven't known each other for long, Mallory, but I also know that I adore you. My only regret about us living together is that we didn't do it sooner. I said once that you shifted everything else in my life out of focus, but now I realize that everything is clearer than it's ever been. You are an incredible woman. I love you so fiercely that it scares me at times. If I were to ever lose you, well.
He shakes his head as if the mere thought of it is mortifying.
I can't even entertain the thought that I could ever lose you. You make every day the best day of my life.
He reaches into his pocket and pulls out a gorgeous diamond solitaire.
Wow, I murmur. Marry me, Mallory. Let me love you every day for the rest of our lives and through whatever may come after we're gone. Be my partner, my lover, and my best friend.
He reaches over to wipe a tear from my cheek. I can't speak. I'm so surprised that all I can do is stare into his eyes.
What are you thinking, love?
That I'm going to be really pissed off if this is a dream. He smiles and kisses my cheek, then my lips,
and pulls back so he can put the ring on my finger.
Is that a yes?
Oh my God, yes! I jump into his arms and hug him tightly. I've never wanted anything more.
He kisses the crown of my head. I don't want a long engagement. It seems I'm not quite as patient as I thought I was.
I lean back to kiss him squarely on the mouth, and then admire the round diamond on my finger. This is beautiful.
It was my grandmother's, he replies, and holds it up to the light. It's just under 3 carats, and you can have it reset any way you like.
I love it just the way it is, I say, and kiss him again. I can feel the love that was shared because of this ring. I don't want to change a thing.
Epilogue. Benjamin Preston. Are you ready for this? Eli asked Beau with a pat on the shoulder. We're standing at the altar in Beau's backyard, waiting for the girls to walk down the aisle. You have time to back out? I'm not going to fucking back out, Beau says with a roll of his eyes. The engagement was long enough as it is. You were engaged for a month, Declan reminds him. And you're lucky that it's warm enough out here today to do this. You couldn't wait until spring? No, Beau says and sends his brothers a glare. I couldn't. I just grin and stay silent the way I usually do. I'm waiting for the girls to walk down the aisle as well because I'll get a glimpse of the woman I've been in love with for as long as I can remember. The music starts and first comes Mallory's best friend, Lena. She's in her pink bridesmaid dress, smiling happily. She's pretty enough, but she's not my type. There's only one woman that's my type. She's looking directly at me right now. Savannah Boudreaux keeps her eyes on mine as she walks slowly in her pretty pink dress, holding a bouquet of flowers. I'll never remember what she wore today, but I'll never forget the way she looks. She's beautiful. She's so fucking smart and sweet as can be. And she will never be mine. The end. This has been an Audible Studios production of Easy Magic, Book 5 in the Boudreaux series. Written by Kristen Proby, performed by Zachary Weber and Rachel Fulgenetti. Executive producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2017 Kristen Proby. Production copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.